We're in a bit of a somber mood today.
Not that somber, I hope.
Yeah, I actually don't know.
That's like the saddest song ever written.
It is the saddest song.
It's actually really... Okay, so I just want to put it out there that I wanted Toni Braxton Unbreak My Heart, and I was going to play off of that with the whole Mitch Marner being injured and leaving the game and Say It Ain't So. I'm not sure what's happening right now.
A young person is playing a song.
We're a minute into the show, and it's out of control already.
Yikes.
I might leave.
Just follow that board right there. I know it's for the early morning show, but just follow it.
We don't do boards
here. She doesn't do boards here. We've established this, David. She does not do boards.
Yeah. Anyways, a lot to get to, which, by the way, so you know how yesterday coming onto the show, I see this stuff about the colonoscopy cameras being stolen. Now I'm seeing Jeannie Bouchard she's agreed to a second date with the guy that she made that bet with on Twitter.
Right, but she's got a boyfriend.
That's what I thought.
He dates a hockey player.
Who?
Probably should. I don't know how public it is, but yeah, she dates a player.
You're going to drop
I'm just,
that.
Sorry, dropping that.
What am I thinking? Yeah, I don't know why I was thinking doing that.
Grades of the day.
Put it this way. She was dating Jordan Caron of the St. Louis Blues.
Okay. Well, she did
I'm not really sure what I just
that's
did.
That's a while ago.
I'm not sure why I just did that.
You just went People Magazine on people.
I never talk about people's personal lives.
Well,
ever.
No, but this is the
you
thing.
Just did.
I did.
Because I'm going to admit, I creeped. I was interested. I went on her Instagram page. And I was like, hey, what's up? Like, is she dating anybody? Because this is kind of funny. And she was recently... somewhere, I don't know, Puerto Rico, somewhere. She was recently on vacation. And she has, there's a picture with like just her.
Yeah, it's her and Caron.
Yeah.
And they identify, so I don't feel so badly now because they identified themselves. I don't feel so badly.
Still their personal
life. It is their personal life, but they put it out there, so I'm feeling not as badly as I did 5 minutes ago.
No, right? You should feel just as bad.
And
really?
If it is in public?
Yeah, I think so.
It is now.
I have never, honestly, 34 years of doing this, I've never discussed people's personal life.
Meh, who cares if they're dating, they're dating. Big whoop.
I don't discuss my personal life.
Then there's Andy.
Oh,
I'll talk
God.
About anything.
Open book.
I'm Italian. I talk about everything.
Can we talk about the fact that my 12-year-old daughter has figured out how to ping my iPhone from school?
I think it's hilarious.
I know. I can't help you out there. I am not good with technology at all.
So I turned off Find My iPhone, and then she just texted me back and said, you know I can erase your phone remotely, right? To which I said...
How great is that?
To which I said, you know I can take away all your devices for the rest of your life, right?
Your daughter's
really
a little
great.
Hacker. That's what she is. God. She hacked your phone. It's supposed to be the other way around. The parent is supposed to be monitoring the child, not the child monitoring the parent's phone.
Yeah, it's not.
You just got hacked.
I got hacked.
So the Leafs coming off a 5-2 loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Another slow start in the Jackets, you know, getting on the board first. Within the first 5 minutes, we will discuss that. Not just giving up the first goal, but
and
also
then we'll get
just,
in trouble because we go too long on it.
Yeah, just how quickly it happened.
As we look up at the control room.
And we don't have any news on Mitch Marner. So here's the thing. Yesterday in the game, he gets tangled up, goes crashing into the boards. It was his right shoulder, right? It was the right side of his body that took the brunt of it.
Yep.
Tried to skate, you know, left, came back. The period ended, came back in the third, tried to give her a go. At that point, they were down, I think, 4-1. Wasn't going to happen, and they shut him down. Now, here's the thing. The Leafs are off today.
Right.
A complete day off, so we won't hear anything until tomorrow. Unless, of course, when our TSN Hockey Insider Bob McKenzie joins us.
He'll know.
If he's got anything. So I don't know. But we don't have anything as of right now on Mitch Marner as far as the extent.
That would be, if it's any length of time, really devastating. Really significant. He drives. So, you know, Mike Babcock made the point the other day that he thought Austin Matthews could drive a line from center as a center iceman. It's so hard to be a player who drives play from the wing.
And he does.
And he does. And when you think about it, how many playmaking wingers are there in the NHL? How many top-end playmakers in the NHL are wingers?
But they're really centermen lined up at wing.
Right. So Patrick Kane would be one.
For sure.
Who else?
You'd have a handful of guys you'd throw in that mix. Jaden Schwartz would be one.
Right. But more of a goal scorer than a playmaker. Right, he's more of a, isn't Schwartz more of a? I mean, he's more of a.
No,
a
he's
shooter.
A playmaker.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, he's a 25 goal guy.
Yeah. Well, what's Kane for goals?
Right. But I mean, it's
Kane
hard.
And Marner's numbers are
both
eerily
at a high
similar.
Number. Yeah.
Right. It's just hard. I guess the point it's hard to find guys that drive the play from the wing, and he does that, and it would be so. I mean, you know, I mean,
well, the test he passes, Mitch Marner, when you're watching a game, is both audio and visual. If you're watching the game, you notice him. And if you're just listening to the game, you hear his name. And those are two. Those are still, to this day, two really good tests.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good tests on how prominent and active a player is.
And this is the thing. When Morgan Rielly went down, I don't know if the Leafs were as successful in filling that hole as many people would have hoped. Right, Jake Gardner?
Well, they're nowhere near as deep on defense as they are in forward.
So here's the thing. But really, I keep going back, and I know I've said this before, but the guys who were really lighting it up with the Marlies in Kapanen and Leipzig were dealing with injuries. So who do you even have if
right.
this were, you know, a long-term thing?
Well, you've
thing.
Got a guy up here who's doing pretty well right now, and, you know, you'd ride that out, Josh Levo. And
Josh Levo, another good night for him.
Would come back
into
the lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling bad for Soshnikov because it's not like Soshnikov was playing poorly to lose his spot. He dealt with an injury and
Wally
then...
Pip, Andy.
Well, you know what's funny about that is there used to be a thing in hockey, and you'd remember this, Dave, that you didn't lose your spot due to injury. It used to always be, it was kind of an unwritten rule. It's always been in football, too, that you don't lose your spot due to injury because you're asking players to block shots, hit, play hurt. So when you're asking them to do that, it's kind of a quid pro quo that you would then say that if you get hurt, you get your spot when you come back. That's gone away, though.
You may not lose your job, but someone loses their job in the group. Because if someone comes in and plays really well,
right,
you're also obligated to find a spot for him. May not be the exact guy that got hurt.
Right.
Someone in the lineup's going out.
Right. So in Soshnikov's case, he did get nicked.
Mm-hmm.
We presume he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's not back in yet.
And someone else has 5 points in two nights.
Right. And the guy that replaced him has 5 points in two games. So it's just a different mindset. It's one of the ways that the game has changed. It used to be, too, that when you were injured, you played for Mike Keenan. If you were injured, you weren't allowed to be around the team.
Oh, you weren't even allowed in the locker room. They didn't want to see you at all. And in fact, Gord, when you say that, I was hurt at one point during the playoffs, and Mike said, I want you around the room tonight. And I said, well, now you're going to change the rules? Like, you can't have me around the room. And he said, yeah, I want you around the room.
It's still like that now. And I still hear that with a lot of teams now. They don't want the injured players around. And not just in hockey. I hear it about in other sports. Which I always found kind of weird.
You'd have to either rehab first thing in the morning.
Well, if you were in Jersey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You had to be out of the room before anyone even arrived in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Like you were getting rehab at 7 in the morning if practice was at 11 o'clock.
Now, why would that be?
They don't want a distraction. They don't want an excuse. They don't want, a really good player's out of the lineup. We have an excuse. They don't want any of that distraction. They want you to worry about the guys that are in the locker room and the guys that are capable of playing today.
And I just think the guy
And they also want you coming back sooner. They don't want you enjoying the fruits of, right?
You're not hanging around having a jolly good time.
They want you to feel like you're not ostracized.
Give you something to work towards.
You know what? When you said not ostracized, That was the exact word I was thinking of.
But you are. And that's what I'm thinking is that you're in some way being like ripped apart from your team because to your point, you did your job. Like you were going out there, you were playing physical, you got injured. And now all of a sudden, you're not part of the team anymore. Like it just feels a little weird. But I get the other side of it too.
Keenan in St. Louis, Keenan fired the doctors and trainers when he took over as the head coach because he didn't want a buffer between him and the players. He didn't want guys who had been there before him. And so he got rid of that. He ended up bringing a couple of them back later. But when they did their medicals that year, they had to go to the University of St. Louis because the new guys weren't in place in time. And the famous story about Brett Hull doing chin-ups, he did three. And the guy doing it didn't know who he was and said, that's all you can do? And Brett said, raising his arms over his head, yeah, but I went to this 86 times last year. Shut up. and walked away. But yeah, Keenan got rid of, like, wherever Keenan went, he was the final word on medical issues.
And the whole thing about losing your job when you're out, it also depends on how good a player you are. You're a fourth liner, there's a good chance you'll lose your job when you're out. If you're a first liner, you're fine.
But which is why I don't think Babcock's stressing over getting Soshnikov back in the lineup, given the way
also
Leafs
play. I remember a guy blocking a shot and breaking his foot and coming back and not getting in and saying, why would I ever block a shot again? The guy laid out for you.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
Hey, if somebody's better than you, they're better than you. It doesn't matter if you broke your foot or not.
Well, and here's the thing: like, how do you replace a Mitch Marner? You don't.
You don't. And I hate to say it, in the cap world, you don't.
Yeah.
You just don't. And so, you know, hope it's not long term for him. And but more than that, you know, you hope that. And this is a long way down the road, but Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in Edmonton played as a teenager as a small guy and had real shoulder problems the first couple of years he played. Mm. And you know, the one thing about teenagers is this is a rough league.
And you're not growing into your body.
You're not filled into your body yet. And so a couple of teams have done studies on the injury rate for teenage players as opposed to others. And it is significantly higher. On a per-game basis,
makes total sense.
Teenagers get hurt at a much higher rate than other players do. A, recognition, knowing where you are on the ice, mm-hmm. you know, knowing who you're up against. And secondly, just being physically mature. So, you know, if there's any question about Marner, I'm sure the Leafs will err on the side of caution. Because you don't want this to turn
particularly
into
a joint.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A knee, a shoulder, yeah.
So we'll see when Bob McKenzie joins us if he has heard anything. But again, no word on Mitch Marner because the Leafs do have the complete day off today. They'll be back on the ice tomorrow. So 5-2 loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets last night. Let's get to the grades of the game.
It's time to find out who made the grade. This is Leafs Lunch. Grades of the game.
Grades of the game brought to you by Borrowell.com, Canada's leading online provider of personal loans and free credit scores. So I'm going to go first because A, I just said I'm going to go first.
Ladies and gentlemen, listening on the radio, Dave and I are putting on our surprised faces here.
But I'm going first
shocked.
Because my grades have to do with the beginning of the game.
I just have to retweet this Andy Petrillo show with two other guys sitting to her left.
Yes.
Yeah, Andy Petrillo and these guys.
Two spear carriers in Andy's opera.
These guys, these dudes right here.
Andy's going to go first, Gordon.
I'm giving a D to the team start. I mean, this is now the last 10 games. We've seen very slow starts for the team. We've seen them give up the first goal. But I also said it's not even just a matter of giving up the first goal. It's when they're giving up the first goal, which is, you know, a few of those games, it was in the first 3 minutes. You know, last night, and then the other games was the first 5 minutes. And last night, again, it happened, 4:30 into the game. They give up the first goal. And you're back on your heels immediately. Again, you're not even, what happened? And we were discussing this poorly earlier, where for a lot of those guys, it could also mean their first shift out on the ice.
Right. In the first 4 minutes, it's a great chance it's someone first shift.
So that is not a good tone that you want to be setting. So it's not just that you're giving up the first goal. It's when you're giving it up. And it's
and believe
immediate.
Me, other teams know that, Andy, and you absolutely know. In their locker room, it's just the opposite. Let's light it up early here, boys.
Get on them quick. Get on them quick.
So D to the team start, but I'm also going to give... I was struggling with this grade. I mean, is it a D or is it a C? I end up giving it a C.
Because you're a soft grader.
I know.
We've been over that.
But it's to... And I don't know. I mean, do we point the finger to Andrew Brewer, who's the guy in charge of video for the Leafs? So this is the not challenging that first goal. And this is why... So if you remember last weekend against Boston... David Pastrnak scores. Yeah. And again, it's one of those early goals. It was 2:17 into the game. And it was so clear that it was not offside. Like, it was just clear that you knew that goal was going to count. Yet, they challenged. So, 2:17 in, and I said, you're going to lose your timeout. And I remember we had Pierre Maguire on that Monday because the Boston game was on a Saturday. And I said, Pierre, like, do you agree with them having challenged so early in a game? And especially with a call where it was 90% sure you were going to lose. And he said, most definitely, because what do you have to lose? The Leafs had been giving up the first goal in games. So, you take a chance, you challenge, and you just try to set the tone that way. So, then here's my question. Why would you not do that here where you knew there was a good chance you could win it?
You think that goal would have been overturned?
You know what? I really do. Given a lot of other things
actually,
I saw.
It looked like he pushed his pad into the net before the puck went in the net. If you look at it closely,
right.
Josh Anderson's there. It's the puck is not in the net until he pushes at his left pad, not his right pad.
So here's the interesting part of that. That is technically not reviewable. Goalie interference is reviewable. That's mm-hmm. contact with the goaltender that prevents him from making the save. In
right.
theory, now it hasn't worked out this way, but in theory, pushing the goaltender's pad into the net is not supposed to be reviewable. It's only goalie interference. Goalie interference and offside are the only two criteria for a coach's challenge.
But I've seen that be classified as goalie interference.
Right. So what's happened is the parameters of it have widened somewhat to include things like pushing the goaltender's pad in. So
if that's the case, you had an argument last night because he did push his pad in.
Because he had the puck under his, to your point, he had the puck under his right pad, mm-hmm. and it was down, and then Anderson shoves his left pad, and then that's when you see McElhinney fly back and the puck trickle over. So I'm just saying
that would have been, I think the goal probably would have stood, but.
But either way, my point is that in a game against Boston where it was pretty obvious you weren't going to win the challenge and you challenged. Why would you not challenge that one and take a chance and not have your team down once again in the first 5 minutes of the game?
So now you're going first and you're questioning Mike Babcock.
Well, it's more
video. But you're laying at the feet of the video guy. This is the first. I'm going to say this is the first time.
There's a lot of finger pointing going on right now.
That Andrew Brewer, who's a fine young man that I've known for a long time, has been singled out on the radio and television.
No, actually, he got a lot of airtime during the shootouts.
We're making him famous.
A lot of airtime.
Good point by
you. If you didn't know him, you know him now. So those are my grades. Okay. Gord?
Well, I get to go next?
Yeah.
I think in the interest of fairness, Dave Poulin should go next.
Okay. Passing it on.
One of the other two guys sitting to Andy Petrillo's left on the Andy Petrillo show.
So that guy over there with the...
thing one and thing two.
So both of you are wearing zippies, so you with the gray zippy.
Okay, I'm going back to your starts, and you will you give them a D on starts?
I give them a D.
Yeah, and I'm pointing at two specific players, at James Van Riemsdyk and Tyler Bozak, who are veterans of this team, and they have to be the ones standing up and saying, start me in this game because we're going to start well. And their minutes were way down as the game went on, 12 and a half and 14. One shot for James Van Riemsdyk and both minus one. So you're just looking to someone to say stop the flow. And I'm putting the pressure on the veterans because those are two of the guys that have been there the longest.
What was your grade?
C-.
C-.
I'm going to give Josh Levo.
Wait, is that all your grades or do you have another one?
No, that's it.
That's it.
We're
short and crisp.
Actually, David and I are actually quite concise because we know you hog all the airtime. So we like to be, we know what this.
We know you get your grades in early, so we've already put our grades in for Saturday.
Have you?
Yeah, we have.
Who wins?
We actually.
Who wins? I'm driving to Buffalo that night. It would really help me if I knew who wins.
I unusually threw my grades in about 2 hours early this morning and was notified all the players I chose were taken.
I put mine in two hours earlier.
He put his in last night, so I'm like, you know what? I'm not doing this again. So I put my grades in last night too.
Walk the dog at 6:30. Get your grades in.
I think I've set a new standard here.
You're up in the curve.
I don't like this. I don't like this new student who's joined the group here. He's making us like get things done early.
Don't worry, I won't be here long.
Okay.
From what I hear.
What are your grades?
I'm going to give Josh Levo a B+. I think he again. We talked about him yesterday as a guy who, not to put too fine a point on it, is a bad game away from being out of the lineup. He doesn't have a lot of cushion to stay in the lineup. Another good night for him last night. Two assists. He drove play again. He was noticeable all night. And I'm going to give a D to the Leafs D as a group. It's a group D. I just think that as a group, they weren't very good last night. They really weren't. I mean, Morgan Riley had the giveaway where he pushed the puck around the boards and got stuck in front of the net.
Yeah, Zaitsev's got to control that. That's a controllable puck.
And Zaitsev's late coming back. So Riley's by himself in front.
Really tough turnover by Kadri on the one, too. That's a terrible
Connor
turnover.
Carrick had a tough night. As a group, they weren't very good.
Yeah, almost to a man.
Yeah, they really weren't very good last night. So I would give them a D. That's probably the weak part of that team. That's probably the hole they have. And that was evidenced last night. And I think the other thing, too, is, though, Columbus had been pistol whipped for a couple of days. There was all that stuff about the meeting. And they'd been, they got a tired Leafs team. They're at home. They had to be better, and they stepped up. I mean, that's a game where you would, if you gambled on professional sports, I may or may not have a time.
Do you dabble?
I don't bet on hockey very much, but
Gord, I used to look around our locker room sometimes and say, anybody betting on these guys is not a smart man. And I was in the locker room.
There was a guy named Eddie the bus driver when I was growing up in Edmonton. He was a bookie. And he used to say, he was called Eddie the bus driver because he drove a bus. And he always told me, kid, there's only one thing I'll tell you about gambling on sports. Never bet Tony Esposito in the afternoon. That was his advice to me. This is like 1973.
God, gambling. I can't do it.
But anyway, I think everything last night pointed to Columbus.
Yeah.
It really did. Everything pointed last night to Columbus.
Can I just also go off the board here quickly before we go? I want to give an F to that cannon. I hate that frigging cannon.
The first time I called a game there.
Yeah.
First time
you're sitting in there.
If you're sitting there, even if you're a Columbus Blue Jackets fan, like you're deaf if you're sitting there. You're please, no.
I think Al Montoya still got post-traumatic stress disorder from hearing it 10 times that night playing for Montreal.
It'd be great to go with headphones on.
Just horrible. I mean, even when
it's actually pretty cool, I gotta say.
Well, it's cool like the first couple times, but even when I did the All-Star game there a couple years ago, where it went off like 20 times, enough. All right, grades of the game brought to you by Borrowwell.com. Do you know your financial grade with digital innovator That would be Innovator. Borrowwell.com. You can check your credit score for free and get approval on a personal loan up to $35,000. Get graded today at Borrowwell.com. Our TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie, is going to be joining us. We'll see if he has any info on Mitch Marner. And I wanted to get your opinion as well on Tortorella starting Korpisalo. I don't know. Was that a little gutsy? Was that a little message? Was that a little stick you to McElhinney? I don't know. We'll discuss that when we return here on Leafs Lunch as you continue to listen on TSN 1050 and streaming online today, tsn.ca. TSN 1050 is where you are listening to Leafs Lunch. We're streaming online today. No TV. Although you're looking snazzy today, Gord.
No TV today?
No TV.
I wore this top for TV.
Both
it's
of you.
Coral.
You're wearing a coral.
I thought you were actually the crossing guard this morning at your daughter's school.
No, it's orangey. Speaking of just music for a second, did you hear last night in the first period of the game? I thought this is really cool by Columbus. They played a Tragically Hip song.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, a lot of hockey players have influence over stuff like that. They'll pump their own PR people and their own building management people. You know, and the hip was so prevalent in locker rooms for hockey players that
a lot of Canadian boys are everywhere, right?
Yep.
All right.
That was nice.
Let's welcome in our TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie. This Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance It. How you doing, Bob?
Excellent. If there's a Tim Hortons in the town, then they're likely to play the hip.
Mm-hmm. And there's a Tim Hortons in the building, Columbus.
And there's a Tim Hortons in the building, never mind Columbus, period. But Tim Hortons is prevalent, the hip's prevalent, it's all good.
Nice. So, Bob, I don't know if you know anything more than we do, because we know the Leafs have the full day off, but any news on Mitch Marner?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. The cone of silence is down on a day off, so no clue. But, you know, Dr. Bob was watching the highlight of Marner anyways. And this is a completely uninformed guess, so I don't want to get radioed here and have somebody say, well, Bob McKenzie reported this.
No, Dr. Bob reported.
But exactly. Dr. Bob says that because he tried to come back on several occasions, it tells me that it's not that serious, but that's just my uninformed guess. And having watched a lot of hockey, I'm going to guess that as he drove into the boards, that would be your classic minor AC problem, which is a shoulder. And you saw him trying to wave the arm, get it going, the right arm. So I'm guessing right shoulder, but that's entirely guess by Dr. Bob.
And the other thing, Bob, is he didn't tuck the arm in, right? He didn't skate off with the arm tucked against his body, which is usually the sign of something bad, right?
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, who knows? We're just guessing, and we're not supposed to guess, but it's a radio show, and if you can't have a little fun and guess at these things in the absence of any real information from the Leafs, and with it being a day off, it's harder to get hold of people and with what's going on. But hopefully it won't be very long, both for Marner's sake. He's having a tremendous season and, you know, a Rookie of the Year candidate, and for the Leafs as well, because he's been a guy that's he does an incredible job of driving play for Toronto.
Bob, changing gears now to the Vermette situation. We were working together last night when the hearing was going on. Mm-hmm. Unusual to have that big a lag between the result of the hearing?
Yeah, and unless I missed something this morning, and I don't think we have.
Mm-hmm.
We've been
I haven't
searching.
Seen anything from the league yet, which is really, really curious. You know, the way this is supposed to work is, you know, player, in this case Vermette, does something to an official in the game. In this case, Shandor Alfonso, the linesman, and everybody saw it, you know, wasn't happy with the way things went on a face-off, gave him a, you know, we'll call it a love tap, because it wasn't like he two-handed him, but nevertheless, I'm not minimizing it, just saying gave him a little whack on the back of the leg, like, hey, I don't like the way you're dropping the puck, which, of course, is strictly verboten. You're not allowed to
That. You're not allowed to whack the linesman.
Yeah, as Mike Lego would say, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So he got tossed for that, abuse of the official. And when the game is over, the referees and the linesman, and in concert with the supervisor, if there's one there, or in concert by phone with the officiating department, decide amongst themselves how they're going to proceed with it. And they've got three categories, Category 1, Category 2, and Category 3. Category 1 is a 20-game suspension for basically intent to injure an official for real egregious physical contact. Category 2 is 10 games, and that's for any real legitimate physical contact, which we could most certainly say Vermette using his stick to hit the referee on the back of the leg is. Or Category 3, which is a three-game suspension, and that's usually resolved if you throw a stick towards a referee, you spit in the general direction of a referee, you get overly aggressive in an altercation, and manhandle a referee, and the key being in an altercation. So three games. So they talked about it after the game, and to our knowledge, and it hasn't been confirmed officially by the National Hockey League, but to our knowledge, they went Category 2, right. 10 games. Then what's supposed to happen is the next morning, the NHL and the NHLPA get on a conference call, and they say, okay, we're going to review the referees and the linesman's application of this rule. Is it kosher? Is it done by the book? Do we all agree? Da-da-da-da-da. And at the end of the conference call, once everybody's had their say, then the NHL usually puts out a press release that says Antoine Vermette assessed a Category 2 violation, abusive official, automatic 10-game suspension, got 72 hours from now to appeal that to NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, where Bettman can either uphold the ruling, increase it, or decrease it as he sees fit. And this conference call didn't take place yesterday morning. It took place last night after 6 p.m., and we're still sitting around here waiting for that release to come out, which is really, really unusual. So is there something amiss? Are they thinking of not doing the Category 2 and something different? We don't know, but the mere fact that it's taken this long is at least a little bit intriguing.
Can I just say that spitting at anyone, I mean, even when you said it, Bob, just gave me this disgusting feeling. I think that is so horrible. And if anyone were to ever spit at anyone, I would even say, just, well, you're out of the league.
Roberto Alomar.
Ugh.
Spit on Jordan Hirschbeck. It's
horrible.
It's disgusting.
It is so disgusting. Yuck.
I would say spitting and hair pulling are really bad, but I once got a six-game suspension in men's hockey for pulling hair. So
yes, you did.
There's so much easier back then, too, Bob. Everybody had the long flows going.
Everyone had the mullet.
It was easy to grab something.
Now everyone's got the buzz cuts. It's harder to do, but you know, it's easier to spit on people.
Well, I'm okay with the hair pulling. In that case, though, in my own defense, in that case, it's a men's hockey league. Oh. It's a men's hockey league, and there's a line brawl. Now, in, you know, the
non-contact men's hockey league?
Well, I don't know. The Rankin men's hockey league in Sault Ste. Marie was not very non-contact.
Everything in Sault Ste. Marie is full contact.
I want to hear this defense. Hold on. What's your defense?
So the defense is this. There's a line brawl. Mm-hmm. And there's only two officials on the ice. It's not a three-man system. So guess what? There's people getting beat up all over the ice. And guess who was getting beat up? Me. I was on the ground, and there was a guy on top of me, and he was filling me in. And there was nobody coming to break it up. There was no cavalry coming. So, to Dave's point, he had a rather substantial afro. So
good.
I just reached up and I grabbed the chunk.
You should totally be allowed to do that.
Chunk.
You should totally be allowed to do that.
Six-game suspension. It was more life-saving than was
there. There is, Bob, however, no excuse for you calling two stick measurements coaching a peewee game.
Well, that's another story. But that's another story.
No, so Bob, you are not always an innocent victim. Is my point. Is it?
No, that was calculated.
My first ever fight.
Payback's a bitch.
Yeah, my first ever fight. I took out a chunk of a girl's hair. It's okay. Don't mess.
Okay, good. I feel good then.
My last fight in hockey, I got beat up by John Kordick.
Oh.
That prompted
you
my
fight. I can't even
good
picture
time
you
to quit.
Fight.
It was good to,
there's something else I can do with my life than this. And the referee stood there and said, "You deserve that."
Well, then there
and
you
he,
go.
And he was right.
So, Bob, Pierre LeBrun has written an article on Carolina Hurricanes and their depth at D. So, how much attention is that team getting with regards from other teams who need defensemen?
Well, I think there'll be a lot. I mean, I'm sure the Colorado Avalanche, who, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm not 100% sure on this, I think they were in to scout. They're in to scout Carolina this week. Yeah. They were in Boston, obviously, checking out the Bruins. And they've got Landeskog and they've got Duchesne. And certainly, I think Carolina recognizes at some point they may have to parlay their depth on defense to a little additional help up front. I really like where Carolina's headed if they can keep it all together from a financial point of view. But, Sebastian Aho is a terrific rookie. He hasn't gotten much attention this year because of the incredible rookie class. But, and Teravainen and some of the young guys they've got going there. And obviously with Pesci and Slavin and Hanifin and Falk, four really good young defensemen. So I'm sure that Colorado is there looking and saying, yeah, you know, that Noah Hanifin kid looks pretty good. I don't know or think that Carolina necessarily wants to part with him. And I'm not sure that it makes any sense for Carolina to rush into anything between now and the deadline. And that if you are going to look at rejigging your emphasis on young D to get a forward, be it Landeskog or whomever, maybe you're better off to try and do that in the off season and see where you're at.
I think Ron Francis has quietly done a very good job there, Bob. The Teravainen trade being, you know, no one really knew that Teravainen was even on the block, and he pulled that off, right. You know, and getting Brian Bickell back and taking that contract on. But I think he's quietly done a very good job of building that. I actually picked them to finish in the playoffs this year. I thought they were that close, and they quite haven't done it.
And Colorado, by the way, is there tomorrow.
There you go.
Colorado plays in Carolina tomorrow.
So. Yeah, so there's, you know, they're obviously going to get a firsthand look at that. And Hanifin right now kind of see one of the reasons why Hanifin's name's coming up so much is because he's not playing at a really high level right now. He's not, and maybe his role is not as major as some people thought it would be. A lot of nights he plays outside their top four. Well, what's happened, as I understand it, is that Pesce and Slavin, yes, have found really good chemistry, and they've been a tremendous pair. And then you've got Hainsey, the veteran, playing with Falk, and they've been very good
and
together.
And Falk's a star.
Yeah, and it's not a matter of, I think, of Hanifin not meeting expectations so much as Pesce, Slavin, Hainsey, and Falk all coming together and the chemistry being so strong in that top four. So he's left as the third pairing guy who doesn't get the same partner, who doesn't get the same quality of partner as the other guys get. And so as a result, I think it's been a little slower coming. But I wouldn't necessarily say that translates into, oh, we think he's expendable and we're suddenly ready to move on. But I do think that, they're entertaining the notion of looking at their defense, their young defenseman, and saying, do we need to move one of these guys for a forward? But knowing Ronnie and the way that Carolina operates, I'm going to guess it's going to be a methodical process and not one that requires, to your point, Dave, I mean, they'd love to make the playoffs, but I don't think they view making a deal like that as something that will tilt it one way or the other to get into the playoffs for this year, and that they'll stay the course and see what their options are in the offseason.
And a couple of pretty good kids coming in, Julian Gauthier and Roy as well, that had great World Juniors.
Yeah, and they got Hayden Fleury and they got Jake Bean. You know, they've been stockpiling the cupboard with a lot, mm-hmm, of good young players. And
they really like the goaltender too, Nedeljkovic.
Yeah, absolutely. He's really good. And, you know, he's a smaller goalie. He's a wider guy. He's thick, but he's not, you know, your classic 6'3", 6'4" goalie, but really acrobatic. Mm-hmm. And that's, so yeah, I think they're headed in the right direction, and everybody seems to think Billy Peters is a real good coach. And I was like you, Dave. I thought that there were a team like Carolina or Jersey might be one of those lurking in the weeds teams that would be ready to make the step up and make the playoffs, but right now that's not the case.
Well, they still have a lot of games in hand, even on the Leafs. Yeah. Like, we, mm-hmm, always talk about the Leafs having these games in hand. They actually have 3 games in hand on the Leafs. They've only played 53, but, I mean, there's still a lot of ground to be made up, as we're talking to our TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie, excuse me. So it seems like whenever we're talking about teams that have a surplus of D, Carolina Hurricanes, Anaheim Ducks, we're talking about the Colorado Avalanche, because we know they're trying to unload. And I know it's no surprise, because we've said this before, when it comes to the Leafs trying to make a move for a D-man, that it's going to cost a lot. But does that seem to be the price? That if you're going to get a young D who's going to have a future, you're giving up a Matt Duchene caliber type of player? And is that why the Leafs maybe are not in the conversation?
What, with Colorado, you mean?
No, with teams like Anaheim or Carolina.
Oh, I see. Oh, right, yeah. Yeah. You know what? I just don't think the Leafs are gonna force it. You know, you can knock on as many doors as you want. You've got to see who's available and what the price is. But the prices are very, very high. And yeah, and if Bob Murray's gonna move one of those young D, or Ronnie Francis is gonna move one of those young D, it's going to be for a premier player coming back the other way.
Yeah.
It's simple as that. And same as the, you know, Joe Sakic and the Colorado Avalanche are looking for, you know, monumental pieces for both Duchene and or Landeskog, you know, 3 or 4 pieces, and the pieces are all what they define as high end, which would be your, you know, a 20-something, and when I say 20-something, I mean 20 to 23 or 24-year-old player that's already played in the league. So, or somebody who's imminently ready to make an impact. So when they're talking to the Boston Bruins, they're talking Brandon Carlo, or I think even what they'd rather have would be Charlie McAvoy, who was so good at the World Junior Championships and playing at Boston University. But I don't think Boston wants to do that. And I think that's the problem you're going to run into. But my point is, Colorado is not just asking for one of those guys. They're asking for that plus a first-round pick plus a top prospect. And if the guy's not a top, if it's not a McAvoy or a Carlo, then they're looking for four high-end pieces. That is, you know, some really high-end draft picks and some really high-end prospects that are not that far off from playing. So that's why deals haven't been made so far.
Bobby, appreciate taking the time.
Thanks, guys.
Don't pull anyone's hair. Don't worry. Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. I'm going to hide my hair from him. This Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It, monthly payment plans for big dreams and everyday budgets.
So yesterday you were an Aerosmith t-shirt. We're on TV. Today we're not on TV. You're wearing a nice sweater.
Do you like my sweater? Is that you paying me a compliment by basically saying I look like crap yesterday, but I look good today? Is that your compliment?
Why would you take that negative approach to Gord's nice
By the way, there's nothing wrong with Aerosmith.
For the first time in my 30 appearances, I said something nice, and I get, you know, see, I'm not doing that anymore.
That's how I do it.
I'm not doing that anymore.
That's how I turn that around.
Passive-aggressive you are. Passive-aggressive.
If the fight breaks out, she's left-handed, too.
So we'll get back to last night's game between the Toronto Maple Leafs and Columbus Blue Jackets, a 5-2 loss. Curious to get your thoughts on Tortorella possibly playing mind games with putting their backup in against the Leafs, putting their backup, McElhinney, who was once the backup of the Columbus Blue Jackets, in. So we'll discuss when we return here on Leafs Lunch as you continue to listen on TSN 1050 and stream online tsn.ca. They'll rescue you from your car lease. Lease Busters, heroic, maybe, helpful, totally. People would love to take over your car lease. For your lease relief, go to leasebusters.com. Welcome back to the final segment of Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. Streaming online today, Andy Petrillo alongside Gord Miller and Dave Poulin. So, you know Curtis McElhinney was going to get the start yesterday. The Leafs in a back-to-back situation. But Columbus Blue Jackets didn't play the night before. Yet, John Tortorella opting to go with his backup, Jonas Korpisalo, the guy who essentially took McElhinney's job, which was why McElhinney was put on waivers and the Leafs got him anyway.
I like it. If I'm coaching, I like that.
So
you
like John Tortorella's gutsiness?
Yeah, I like saying to Korpisalo, hey, you're the guy that replaced him, play better than him, win a game. Gives him a chance to rest Bobrovsky.
Who wasn't great in his last start.
Nope.
Just okay in his last start.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the philosophical question about whether a goalie does well against his former team because he knows the shooters. Well, the shooters know him. I mean, it's such a... I used to laugh and they'd say, well, he's playing because that's his former team. And I'd say, well, that just means all the shooters know him as well as he knows them.
No kidding.
I don't think there's an edge there. I really don't. Maybe a motivational edge. But if he's playing better because he's playing his former team, there's something wrong with that picture, too.
Here's the thing I don't understand, this motivational edge. To me, players are
something
up for,
wrong with that.
Players are up for every game.
Yes.
So you're telling me that Curtis McElhinney should have been more inspired last night because he was playing as Columbus?
I never understood it, Gord.
I would think at that level, he's inspired to play every night.
Yeah, I never understood that philosophy. I just didn't.
I will say this. I think you're definitely motivated, you're inspired, but I'm not going to lie. If I saw them start the guy, so you know for a fact they're not in a back-to-back situation. If I see that, you know what's it, who took my job. Well, first I'm going to hit him with my stick.
First of all, they're good friends.
I don't care.
Korpisalo and McElhinney get along very well.
There's no such thing as friends on the ice.
Well, sure there is.
No.
She would fight so dirty, Gord.
Oh, my God.
I would pull your hair.
Korpisalo had nothing but praise for McElhinney before the game and talked about how helpful he was to him when he arrived in the league and what a good teammate and what a good friend he is. So, I mean, I don't think he's looking down the ice and saying that. He just wants to win the game.
It's a chance to win a game. I don't mind it at all.
McElhinney wants to win a game. Korpisalo wants to win. Like, honestly, like.
But I'm not going to. I like what Tortorella did, though. Like, I have to admit, I like it. And I would have liked it more, obviously, if the Leafs pulled out the win and McElhinney was like, meh, whatever. You can put whoever you want in net. You're going to win. But whatever. I still like what Tortorella did.
Sure. And I think in a lot of cases, also mixing it up a little bit. Change the record a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Make it different. Make it, you know, make your own guys a little uncomfortable. Make your own team a little, you know, hang on a sec. This is not Bobrovsky back here. That sort of thing.
Comfort is a word that coaches hate. They hate that word. Guy Boucher used it this year earlier, and the Ottawa Senators were on a little winning streak, and he said, I don't want the guys comfortable. That's something I don't want. I want them on edge.
On their toes, all the
life
time.
Life is pretty good for that group of guys.
Well, comfortable, you know what I mean? is on that fine line of becoming complacent, right? Like, you always fear that it's comfortable will turn into complacent, and, of course, you never want that. But we got a question somebody sent in, and I don't have my Twitter open right now, but it was a valid question. We got it before. And I'm a little scared now that Leafs fans, once again, we're going to get stuck talking about the eighth defenseman. But we got, do you see Marchenko getting into the lineup this weekend?
Well, you picked him up for a reason. You're going to play him at some point. This would be a fine time to put him in.
Stuart O'Brien, sorry. I wanted to give credit to the person who asked the question.
I would expect we're going to see him at some point. That's why they picked him up on waivers, not just to hold on to him and practice him. And
ask Frank Corrado how that goes.
But they can't keep
That's
using the reasoning
though,
he's not practicing with the team because there's very little practice time given the schedule. So they're off today. They'll practice tomorrow. But are you going to give him a chance or no?
You better
the
play
difference
soon.
With Frank Corrado, though, when I look at this, is the coach had more input into this one because he coached him in the past and knew him.
Okay.
And that probably gives Marchenko a leg up on the situation because the coach is familiar with him and is more apt to put him into a game.
He hasn't played in a month. Like, it's been a month now.
Mm-hmm.
Because what, January 30th or something like that was like his last game?
His last game was January the 20th.
January 20th, okay.
So it's been, you know, almost a month this week. I just, you know, at a certain point, a guy's got to get, a guy's got to get in.
You know, and I think the coach is more apt to play.
I think what the Leafs did to Frank Corrado was a disservice. I think claiming a young guy on waivers and making him sit for 2 months.
Played two games this year. Entire year.
But and he sat for 2 full months before he finally made his debut with the team. You have the right to do it. There's nothing, you know, there's no rule against it. But it's a young guy trying to make his way in the league. He needs to be playing.
But it's not in your best interest either, because how is that helping you in any capacity? So
to claim a guy off waivers, not play him. Like, it's just a bad reputation.
Well,
you've
only got 23 roster spots.
Right.
You want to use those roster spots for people that can play in the games.
Right.
That's the idea.
I didn't quite understand that philosophy, and I think that it's, look, the Leafs don't owe guys anything. They pay them and they can do what they want. But I just think, you know, when you're on that progression, when you're on that development track and you're a young, it's not like he's a 30-year-old guy. Is what I'm saying. Like, they didn't claim a 30-year-old on waivers and say, you're our insurance policy in case someone gets hurt.
Yeah, and the worst type of player to be is one who's just earned the right to get waivers.
Right.
Because it means you're really young and you're still a prospect, but the team can't send you down. And that's exactly what happened.
So finally, Corrado played so little, they put him on waivers and he wasn't claimed. So the Leafs would say, well, we're vindicated here because no one else wanted him, but he didn't play. Like, I don't like to see young players sitting for long periods of time. I don't think it's good for anybody.
That's the whole idea of waivers, is so teams couldn't stockpile a young player like that.
Yeah,
and in a rare circumstance, it works exactly opposite what the intent of the waiver rule was. The waiver rule was so the Montreal Canadiens couldn't stockpile 49 guys.
Right. There were nights, you know, in the 80s, I'd be covering the Edmonton Oilers. There'd be nights when they'd play another good team, and there'd be like 12 good players in the press box. Oof. You know, and that was no good for anyone. I didn't like seeing Anthony Beauvillier of the Islanders play 12 minutes the other night and almost no shifts.
As an 18-year-old.
In the second and third. Like, mm-hmm. 19, I think, now. But, like as a teenager. Like, you're on such thin ice trying to get to that level. And when you're not playing much, or you're not playing with, you know, he's a scorer who's playing with fourth line players, at times. I hate seeing that. I just.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you didn't hate it last night with JVR Nylander, who were not having such good games, playing a lot.
Different circumstances.
Yeah, Nylander did not have a good night last night. And I cut him a lot of slack. And Dave, you know this as well as anyone. Young players need to learn how to play defensively. And Exhibit A is Nazem Kadri. Exhibit A. Look at him now. Nose-to-nose with Tavares the other night, he was terrific. Mm-hmm. But for 5 years, it was the school of hard knocks for him. And so, I mean, I'd hate to see Toronto give up on Nylander because he's not very good defensively.
You know, it's funny. It's the curse of being a very good offensive player. And we'd call a young kid up and he wasn't very good defensively, and the coaches would be moaning about him. And I'd say, he's had the puck his whole life. How is he supposed to know how to play defense? Like,
right.
It's not his fault. He's got to play in an environment where he's forced to learn it. And that's the challenge of it. Willie Nylander's had the puck his whole life. It's not his fault. He's really good. Yeah. He's had the puck his whole life.
I was sitting watching Jason Spezza play in junior with Scotty Bowman. And Scotty said, I'd love to have that guy. And I said, you know, a lot of teams are wary of him because he doesn't play very good defenses. I can teach anyone to defend. I can't teach them to do that.
Well, it's funny with a skill set, because Mark Stone had a great conversation last week about why he's so good at stealing the puck. And he said, it's because I wasn't a very good skater.
Right.
And then I said, well, because if a kid's a great skater, you don't know if he's got hockey IQ because he doesn't have to show it. He just skates mm-hmm. around you.
Mark Stone knows where to go. He's not a great skater.
He's had to.
But he knows where to go and when to be there. And so in Nylander's case, I'm telling you can't teach what he does. You can't take a young player and teach him to be that.
No,
you either
there's
are
an
or you're
innate
not.
Sense of and skill level.
But you
there.
Can teach him to check. You can teach him to be passable defensively.
And I think, and there's no doubt that, you know, you have to learn both sides of the game, offense, defense, and Nylander would have to learn that. But I think a lot of his defensive woes are just highlighted because the team itself isn't very strong defensively, too.
There is also the fact that he looks disinterested at times. There are times when Nylander...
It's more fun to have the puck, Gord.
It is.
way more fun.
And as Igor Larionov famously said, the best defense is when I have the puck.
That's exactly right, though.
But, you know, last night on the first Columbus goal, I think it was, he's kind of caught up in the wash near the blue line, standing still.
I think it was the second.
Sorry, you're right. It's the second goal.
It's a Jenner goal.
Yeah, Jenner goal. He's standing around again. And
yeah, it's off a face-off, and Kadri gets caught a little bit,
and,
too.
And, you know, and Nylander's personality, he doesn't lack for confidence. So that's
the Swedes have a great expression. You've been there many times. So dare. Like, if you ask a Swede how he's doing on a normal day, they'll say, so dare. Yeah. So dare.
Good. Things are good.
It's like,
life's good. And so
that's what he looks like.
He's got
the kind of casual.
He's also got supreme confidence in his ability.
As he should.
And so... And you don't get to this level without that. But sometimes that confidence comes off as a little bit of arrogance with him. He's just a really confident young kid.
As indifference, it does.
Right. And he's a really skilled kid. If you give up on him, hey, listen, the Boston Bruins gave up on Tyler Seguin, and he's a pretty good player.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean,
this is a highly skilled player, and there's still a lot of people think he was the most skilled player in that draft.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's that skilled.
All right, well, let's see if he can bounce back, because it's a busy weekend for the Leafs. Another back-to-back situation. They'll be taking on the Ottawa Senators at home, followed by the Carolina Hurricanes.
We almost can't talk Sunday. About schedule anymore, because everyone's dealing with the exact same thing.
Yeah, they're all dealing with
it. So
it's
two games on the weekend?
Yeah.
So I'm on Monday.
Ooh.
So I better get my grades.
Double
in.
Grades.
A target-rich environment for grades. This is going to be great.
All right.
I'm going to get them in, like,
cutthroat.
10 p.m. on Sunday.
I will pull your hair. Complete day off for the Leafs today. They're back at practice tomorrow with then back-to-back games on the weekend. That's it for us here on Leafs Lunch. Scotty Mac Show coming up next.